Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians in Bed. And as always, this is a place where comedians can be comedians. I don't really know, you know, exactly what that means, but it sounds real good. It sounds like something you should say on a podcast, man. I'm so excited today because we have another great guest here for you guys. A very interesting guest, a very guest that puts her best foot forward. And every time it lands on the ground, it's like Shaq coming down from a dunk. Like, it shatters everything. Like, she's doing her thing, and I'm so excited that we have her here today, man. Please give it up for the wonderful, very funny, very talented Hannah Rohms, everybody. What's going on?
Going good. Love the studio audience. The audience, thank you to everybody that just applauded. It really means a lot. Yeah, I'm really excited to do this podcast. I feel like, I mean, you've been doing this for a while. I'm stoked to finally get to be a part of it. And I think it's really good stuff that you talk. You know, it's like for comedians or non or not. So,
man,
I'm kind of upset that there's no cats on. Sometimes you put cats on the screen, right?
It's fine. Cats were kind of creeping everybody out, and I was like, yeah. I don't know how to explain the cats when I don't have a cat. So I was like, all right, we'll just drop the cats.
Yeah, the cat now's kind of weird. No, as a cat, I have cats, so
fine. And it was like, do I go get a cat or do I just keep them? And I was like, you know, yeah. I'll just get rid of them.
It's kind of like a weird argument to make like a cat shelter to be like, yeah, I need some because I have comedians in bed. I'll let you take one home.
I know, man. I'm that was another thing. Like, I was like, I could make everybody that's on here record from their bed. But then I was like, you know what? That don't even sound right trying to explain that to somebody, like trying to get them on, like, hey, I do a podcast, but you have to be in bed. It just, you know, I try to make this as least creepy as possible.
I think, yeah, I actually contemplated doing it in my bed. I honestly thought like maybe that would be the vibe. And I decided not to, because I'm sure like I was ever seeing somebody else do it that way. But yeah. I would have been the first, you know. Go on.
Go ahead, my fault.
No, you're okay. There's the one girl podcasts, right? She had that awkward. I forget her name. Her podcast name is like, super boring or podcast or something, but she interviews people and these people in bed sometimes. She interviewed Drake and then it was taken down. You know what I'm talking about. You're a podcast person.
I think I've had like maybe two, one on purpose for sure, that has recorded from their bed. And it was a good episode. But it was hard for me to get comfortable. Like my mattress is memory foam. It's not really a bed that's meant to be sit on. It's only meant to be laid on. So like,
yeah, you're sinking the entire time.
Yeah, like back all hurting and stuff. And you trying to ask the next question. You know, like, how nervous were you? You first got up, first time doing stand up, and your back is just all twisted out of shape. It's crazy, yo.
It doesn't work. Yeah. It's a cool concept. I think one day you'll this all in bed, because everyone will be like, of course I'm gonna be in bed. you can't monetize pod do this.
I think the goal, like, once I get like a studio, is to have like me sitting on one side and the other person on one side and the other side, and then like have a headboard in the back so we can emphasize that we're in bed but not actually be in bed. Because I was like, this would be a great idea if we were both in one bed and just like chilling, eating or drinking or whatever in bed, having a real life conversation. But
yeah,
I feel like we would move around too much. The cameraman would just have to be always on 10, you know.
You could do like the I Love Lucy kind of, when two beds. That's couple slept in the 50s. So.
Man, it is, yeah, a lot of ideas, man. A lot of ideas. Are you from Columbus? I've never asked. Like, were you born and raised in Columbus?
No, I'm from the Akron area originally.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I came down here for school.
What brought you down here?
State. I went to school. Then just never left. And now I work remote, so I could say I think live wherever, but I like Columbus. Okay. The comedy scene in Columbus is great, obviously. So I like to stay here. Cleveland's great too, but you know, Columbus is special. Like,
yeah. what part of Cleveland?
Akron area. So it's like a small town near Akron.
I used to live in Youngstown.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, it's like 40-ish minutes away from there, but it's like, Youngstown sounds a little more rural. Rural, is it? Like, it's an old industry town, right?
I mean, Youngstown itself isn't that big, so like after you blink, you pretty much pass the whole city, you know. Yeah, like cool. It's good old Youngstown. Oh, I love Youngstown. So many memories, man. Really? Yeah, if you can make it in Youngstown, you can make it anywhere.
Really? Is that what they say?
Yes. Yes. That's, man, on the sign. Youngstown is like a place where like you were like meant to not make it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you were just like not meant to make it, but
yeah,
if you make it there, you can make it anywhere.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
that's where Jay-Z got from the one.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Empire State of Mind.
Yeah.
Youngstown, yeah. State of Mind.
I was you know, the crazy thing about Youngstown is, like, growing up, you hear so many rumors about, well, at least not growing up, I didn't grow up there, but, like, living there, you hear so many rumors about, like, there used to be a mob or whatever, and, like, I don't know, it still gives you, like, those vibes, like, you're still alive during those times. Like, I think it's the houses, though, because the houses out there are super, super big, and you was like, yes, this seems like a mobster's house. Like, they're so big.
That's so crazy. See.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel like the Italian mob makes sense. They need like some kind of home base in North Carolina, so.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's crazy. One of the things that I admire so much about you, I never really thought about it until I saw you do it, was you have characters. One character, I would say her name is Meemaw.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a lot of people, like, sometimes you see it online, and so I think that's why I didn't really acknowledge it at first, but like sometimes you see people have characters online, but I've never like really seen like translate like on stage or like on a show or something like that. And I think you were the first person that made me look at it that way, because I think just in our scene we didn't really have that at first. So like when you're coming up with like one of your characters, or if someone were to come up with like a character, where do they like start? Like, how did your inspiration for like Meemaw come about?
Sure. My inspiration for Meemaw kind of get I have Appalachian like relatives basically. And so growing up there's a lot of like little things that I feel like I know. But Meemaw, and I think a lot of characters I are based of like one small thing that does, and then like you can be like what if that whole person's person, like, I mean, was Appalachian, yes, but she's not like stupid. I think a lot of people think like, oh, you're the old like hillbilly kind of like trope, and that's not it at all. But Meemaw happens to be Appalachian, but she also happens to be the characteristic that you might experience with an old person talking to your grandma's like, yeah, will you pass? Also, that reminds me of that one time I was a go-go dancer on a cruise. Anyway, the weather's really nice, right? Like, Grandma, what did you just say about being a go-go dancer? We've never heard this before. Mm-hmm. It's kind of that one weird thing that like people do. And I was like, what if higher person's personality? That's kind of how Ma is was kind of born. I think. The same thing is a lot of different characters I've done for like shiz or things like this, where you kind of just think of like one aspect of somebody, and you're like, what's somebody's entire thing, or like pick, and then you're like, okay, say this person is like really angsty. Like I had character like a disgruntled raggedy ramen employee. Okay? And so R.I.P. to them. But if anyone doesn't know, like, if you raggedy ramen is a consignment shop in Columbus that recently was. And my experience with it, people being always like very kind of mean when you're like going to sell your clothes there, and like they don't want it. And in a way, it's kind of like roasting your. So it's like, what if that's someone's entire personality roasting you? And then that's this character. So I try to think about like if you have a strong character, you can really apply any stance and like any sketch, and it'll be fine. I think always starting character, like who that person is, and like giving them a backstory, and then you're like, okay, now I want to see that person. What's it like for them to guess? What's it like for them to like go to the DMV and get their driver's license, or go on or do all these things? And you can have like infinite abilities if you have a strong character. And I think the same thing is true with Nettie from SNL. Like they have multiple matches of her with like in different positions, and it's like she's always what does that look like, you know? So that's kind of my intention for Mima or other characters.
Yeah, I was I think the only person who, I mean, there might, well, let's say there's two people. It would be people who have let, I guess, their characters like shape their career. One person I could think of is Larry the Cable Guy. Like, I don't even know like his real name. You know, he's just always Larry the Cable Guy. That's a character that took him from, you know, one spot to the top. And then I also think about like Tyler Perry's character Madea, where he keeps that along and stuff like that. How do you keep like the longevity of your character, or when do you know like it's time to end it or start a new character?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that like if a character is strong enough, you can play it for like a time. Like, I mean, Madea, you can see Madea's in a ton of different movies and he's in a ton of different scenarios. I mean, like same thing kind of applies. And I think that it kind of you have to be strategic in how you create the character. Like, I forget what book I was somebody who worked with Larry the Cable Guy. It was like a comedian or something. And they were saying about how you kind of at some point I think I had to tone down his character because it was so this level of just like oh, who's the one guy that does the you might be a redneck if. Like all these kinds of like tropes, like I'm a redneck and that's redneck and that's the only I have. Like that's play, and you might be able to like that for, you know, decades. But as a creator, you might also feel like a little bored if you are so tied to this one character that's very very surface level. So like creating, I think some layers character, and I don't know if I have this fully figured out yet, but having it so like these characters have like depth or purpose or have like defining all of these things as you would if you were writing like a movie is really helpful. Sometimes like people go on and create characters and they're like, I just think it's funny, goofy little accent, you know, and that's fine. I have a goofy little accent, go for it. But you might not be able to play that for 5-10 years at some point.
I came to one of your shows. It was the all woman improv show, and it was pretty cool, but. Where do you get your permission to like be yourself? Because like you, and in no offense, because I take it as a compliment, you're very very weird. Like, you know, what I'm saying?
Somebody wrote to me after once, and they were like, "I love really lean into your awkwardness." And I was like, "I thank you."
Yeah, like you had to be like a tampon, and then like you played it so well, like I could see like the tampon like come to life, but like you couldn't have been able to do that if you didn't like 100% let yourself go there. And as adults, you know, we kind of shy back from that, because then we're kind of like, oh, this is weird, you're crazy, you know what I'm saying? But really, that's just our inner child being able to play. So like, how do you give yourself permission to do that? Because some people, I think that's what makes them like shell up on stage or not giving themselves permission to be themselves.
Man, 100% I agree with you. I will say too with this, I was acting like I was a tampon. It was during an improv game for more context and mixed, and it was like panel spurts, so the audience asks live questions and you get these quirks from the outset. You're suddenly this character, like I'm suddenly a tampon. And my boy afterwards, he was like, all you do is play. He's just realized this, but like all you're doing is pretend up there and there. And I'm like, you come to my shows for the last 5 years. You just don't realize. But I really is playing pretend. And it's like you said, giving yourself the permission to like be goofy. And honestly, I started in improv. I think also, even before that, growing up, I was always okay to like be weird. I was definitely, theater, but just like okay to be myself. And I tried to, my parents really helped me to like not care what people thought and just kind of like lean into who you are. And I think that that is something I was really grateful that I had growing able to do that. I know a lot of people can't. I think that's really helped me, but even more so, improv helped secure that for me too. Like having the ability to like get weird and get a little strange. It's all part of, I think just the perform anyway. And when you remove the judgmental part of your brain, you have so many more ideas. And as like a writer or improviser, like stand-up comedian, you kind of don't realize how judged you are. Like there's like that what's called like the clown part of your brain, and then there's like the, is it the judge or something? It's like this person, and then there's this person that's like critical. And you have to like balance them out, and you need the clown to be able to throw out as much as possible. This is where like all these new ideas come from, like the permission to be weird. Then the editor comes in and like, okay, how are we gonna like make this funny, or how are we sharpen this up? And with improv, it really leans into the clown a little bit more. Getting the stuff on the spot, you don't have time to like edit. And if you edit yourself, you're not in the moment, and you're missing out on scene. So, yeah. I think just like getting comfortable with that and world building is really important. I appreciate that. I pride myself in being weird. I pride myself in being awkward. I've accepted this at this point in my life. So.
Yeah, I've been noticing everyone's version of their weirdness or awkwardness, so. And I think like when I hear like, and I know they don't mean no harm, and not saying no one said this about you, but when I hear someone say like, oh, they're not funny, I hear their reason, and then I'll be disagreeing. I might not say I disagree, but I'll be like, yeah, you just don't understand their style yet. There's a lot of people, when I first came in, I was like, yeah, this isn't funny. But then when you sat down, you watch them, and you're like, oh, this is who they are. And then once you figure out who they are and their style, then you comprehend their humor a little bit more. So I think that night when I had seen you, I was just like, it'd be that level of authenticity that I want. I don't think I'm 100% yet, but I feel like I'm this year. That was my goal, to like be, I feel like I'm authentic on stage, but I feel like sometimes I just kind of clam up a little bit, just trying to think about like what people may think about me, and I can see it through other people too. So no, I really do admire that. I think that's really dope.
Thank you. And I feel like that's something that I think everyone expects that for sure. Like I definitely will get in my own heading. I think it's a super normal thing. So do you feel like you get to that point while you're performing, you feel like a little bit at, or is like when you're sitting down and writing jokes by yourself, do you feel like kind of self-critical?
Pretty much on stage, because like, I mean, this year is a little better, but like when I would do like how I got into comedy really is from my mom. Like she would like do weird voices and imitate people or whatever, and I just thought that was hilarious. And that's how I got into, doing comedy, just like kind of like, or I guess like my creativity is just like mocking people and doing their voices and stuff like that. And then like as I got older, like I still do it, but like when I get on stage, like the audience would just clam up and they just like wouldn't receive it. And I just couldn't understand why. But like now this year is kind of like, I kind of don't care. It's just like, I'm just going to go up there and be more so on myself, like humor off stage is like, I may sing a lot, like I, singing type comedy, like, or whatever. And like, I'd be wanting to do that on stage too. But it's like when you get on stage, the audience already have a preconceived notion of you, and it's like once you step outside that box, you got to let them know, yeah, I'm stepping outside of what you see me as, and that's just what it is. Sometimes I feel like when you try to step out that box and the audience clam up, you're like, okay, I'm gonna go back to this confined box of what they have me in. But you really have to control your own journey up there, because if not, the audience can make you do something that you may not necessarily agree with.
That's a really good point. I think too, and thank you for sharing that. I think something that's like, I always try to remind myself of, and this was even like when I first started doing stand-up, coming from like improv, I was like, if if I had to like form other people's version of funny, like what I think are gonna think is funny, like I will find it that funny. I will probably myself in order to try to match them. And then I'm cheating them from authentic like version of myself. And I'm also cheating myself from, you know, actually fully expressing myself as how I want to be. But then on top of two, it's like I've always reminded myself, if I at least write things that I can, even if other people don't think they're funny, at least I know one person in the room will find it funny. It's me. You know, versus like if I try to dilute it to help other people and then they don't find it funny, then like we all lose. You know, none of us are having a good time. And I think the audience is attracted to like people that are on stage, and they can feel that when you like getting a little nervous, smell fear, a lion or a shark, you know. So you have to kind of be comfortable with like okay, yeah, I'm gonna sit with that. Not, don't pull like a Joe Coy and like yell at the audience, you know. But
yeah. Because when I was at the mic on Friday, I told a joke about Drake's penis, and like I just made it from a standpoint of like everybody saw it, like we all rushed to see it, let's not act like we didn't, you know. Like, and then once I made that established, like the guys kind of like screamed like, yeah, we did see it, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, yeah, I know you did, like, you know, like. And then yesterday when I went to a mic, Xavier was hosting, and I said Xavier has like the fattest ass in the room, like, and everybody just started laughing because it's like no one's talking about this, like we all see it, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think like the more, I mean, that's always been me, like I'll call out whatever, but I just think more now that I'm standing more in that, and it's like it is what it is, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just receiving more of a organic reaction. One thing about comedy is like it's kind of, I don't know, I find a lot of things parallel to life, but it's kind of parallel to life. Like, you start off being yourself, and then you put yourself out there. You know, you're born, you're yourself, and then you put yourself out there, you meet certain people, and then they tell you don't do certain things, and so you be a clam of yourself, you know. And then once you get a little bit older, you're like, fuck that, I'm gonna be whoever I am. That's kind of like comedy. Like, you start off, you think you're so fucking funny, and then you go up there and everybody tell you you shouldn't do this, you should say that, you shouldn't say this, so you kind of clam up a little bit, and then you're like, fuck this shit, this isn't who I am, it's not why I came in here, I'm not having fun, I'm gonna go up there, I'm gonna do whatever I want, whoever likes it likes, whoever don't. And that's just kind of like, it's just kind of like that. And yeah, I don't know what point I was making because I got caught up in it, but yeah.
I understand. Something I remind myself of when I'm doing these, like I'm hosting these open mics, is I have a lot of energy, and I am like really forcing to have energy throughout the night. And it's like for anyone who doesn't know, it's like a Friday night, they're like 10:30, they go until like 1 or 2 a.m. sometimes. So it's really late, and oftentimes I've done a show but before it, so be kind of tired at the beginning. And I just like remind myself, I'm like, it's kind of just like a party, you know what I mean? Like, we're just kind of hanging out. And I've kind of removed this like feeling of like, oh, I'm a performance, because suddenly when I have to put on a performance, it doesn't feel like my authentic self. So I lie to my, I'm just hanging out with my friends, and you know, I think that kind of helps like what you're saying, feel more relaxed, or also just like, I'm just going to be myself, I'm just going to be up here, I'm hanging out with people, it's whatever. And I honestly always felt like feel very natural and very calm on stage. So thank you for saying that you feel like a little sometimes an insecure, because I've never perceived that from your
person. Oh man.
Yeah, I've always admired how like chill you are, honestly. So
I'll be filled with anxiety. I've had plenty panic attacks on stage. Like, plenty panic attacks. First of all, I'm calm because I'm high. Let's just face it, I'm high. But another reason why I'm calm is because I just have I'm just a calm. I just have a calm demeanor. But I'll definitely be up there like in my head, like, all right, this didn't work, that worked. So yeah, I'll definitely be like in my own state of nervousness for sure. Like, for sure. Like, but I just try to remind myself, like, these people don't know me, and like I spent all day thinking about these 5 minutes, so I'm just gonna make the best of it, you know what I'm saying? So I've been helping more and just not taking it so like, taking the pressure off a little bit, you know. That's so good. One thing that I really start to notice or understand more is that with comedy, it's just not just stand up. I look at comedy as like music in general. This is the main piece, which is comedy. And then you have like your genres. You got your stand up, you got your sketch, you got your online, you got your improv, et cetera, et cetera. What have you learned about being improv? And then what have you learned about when it comes to comedy, what have you learned about improv and what have you learned about stand up?
Interesting. That's a good question. So I'm sure that people who've started in stand up have different applications for improv, but since I started in improv, I'll start with that. So I would say the first thing that I learned with like improv is kind of like removing that mental part too of your brain that I think a lot of us get caught up in. I think a couple other things I've learned from improv that also applies is like, if this is true, then what else is true? Like improv scene, for example, and you're like, we've, you know, established these goldfish talk a lot and can also like leave the fish tank. Okay, this is true. Like, what else would happen in this world? Maybe these fish are going to get their driver's license someday. So let's see how that plays out. And like kind of build up on layers. And of course that premise would not transfer over to like a stand-up show, but the same kind of thought process applies where it's like, I have this joke of me being very like obsessively thinking, overthinking social situations, and that been really awkward moments, say the wrong thing at the wrong time. Okay, so what is it like for me if I'm like, if this is true about me, my stand-up character, then what is it like at a funeral? What is it like for me to go on a first date? What is it like for me to quit my, and you can kind of like then create all of these things based off of this one like. And so I think the world building at improv has been really helpful in stand. And then I think on top of that, people have told me like how do you like move around so much on stage? Like in my stand, I'm really like physical, and it's because of improv, and it's because of like feeling comfortable stage, but also like really just big with my movements. Also being like theater kid probably helped with that too. I think that's been a really, really big part of it. Some things I've learned from stand-up would be really the writing process. You obviously don't get that with improv, but knowing like write and rewrite things, have been challenging and rewarding for me to like have that down moment with myself where I edit my work over and over and over again. You get a lot more diligent with things. Improv is fun, and you can get really good at the skill, but you never have to revisit the same scenes. And so it's a different kind of tool in your brain, like a different muscle in your brain to like, okay, I'm going to rewrite my set. Okay, I'm going to do this for like a whole year and get really in 5 minutes. Inside of like Dylan, I've had to use in enough that I wasn't really, I think, using an improv in the same way.
Yeah. No, I agree. I feel like I have the same problem too. I mean, I tell people I've done improv. I don't know if that's necessarily how, like, I started. Basically, I just took like an improv class, and I only took one, and it was cool. It was fun, but I think because I took the improv class and because I do stand up, sometimes I see the struggle. Like, I can see how you guys are just so good off the dome, and then when you guys are like in a structured setting, it's kind of like that's. That they don't have that freedom to like, you know, go here. And I feel like I struggle with that too, because I'd be ready to go on to the next joke. Like if I do one joke and it works one night, I'd be like, all right, this joke's good. When it's not, you know, but like, you know, but like I'd be ready to go to the next thing. And I think sometimes that's why when I be on stage, I can, like if I do a joke and then I'll go off the joke and I'll just do crowd work. To me, it's just really just improvising, because it's just like that's kind of, yeah. I think people who do improv first, you have such a leg up, but you don't realize it because you have to be so structured and your jokes have to be like, you know, but you have such a leg up. But I just don't know how to like explain it, like how to make that transition. It's kind of like taking a kid that just had a whole bunch of sugar and it just bounced off the walls, and it's like, no, you got to be still. So for like 5 minutes. Can you do that? And it's like, I get the challenge. It's very, very hard. But I'll be like, man, if they would just really like, I would just say anybody that's like starting off an improv and want to translate to stand up, I would just say go up there and just freestyle and act like you're doing an improv set. But instead of people giving you topics, you're just coming up with the topics.
Yeah.
And just go and just go from there. But I love it. I'd be like, man, if they could just, if they want to do something, and they just do it and just like, yeah, I get it. I see the struggle, but I also think that that is dope that you've conquered more than one form of comedy though. I think that's really, really like dope. Like
conquered's a big word. I'm done. Comes with comedy. But I it's true. I do think a thing I hear a lot from improvisers on why they haven't done two is like they're really nervous to be on stage by themselves. Cause like with improv you have like somebody that you call on if you need. I think that's really fair too. Like improvisers, I think generally are really good team player. Stand comedians are too, but they're like lone wolves. And so I think there's like a combination being confident enough with like yourself on stage. Like I think stand-ups, a lot of them are like, I feel good going on stage and knowing exactly what I'm going to do, so I feel secure. And then improvisers are like, I don't know if I trust myself to need to do, but I know that I could work with another person. And so it's kind of like an interesting dynamic. But yeah, you should do improv. I want to see you do more improv.
I know. I don't want nobody to hate me. I don't want them to be like, dang, like he does this too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want nobody to hate me.
It's okay. It's fine. It's fine. There's plenty of us. I won't hate you. A little club, man. It'll be great. Great.
No, I do love improv. I should get back into it. You guys are really, yeah, that's really creative. That's really creative. But I feel like that's another form of authenticity that I don't know. I'm like, should I show people that, you know, how weird I am?
Who's going to care? Like, I don't know, man. I feel like, Ty, I don't know if you know, like, you have a podcast. You just stand up. You're already kind of freaking weird. You know what I mean? Like, like you must just lean into it. I don't know. You're not being normal, you know, and that's good.
I think it's because, man, you have a 9-to-5 and you have to be professional for 8 hours, and then it's just like you gotta unlock that, like put that in a treasure chase somewhere and be like, all right, for these next hours that you have, you can do whatever you want, you know. Like it's kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta unleash a little
yeah
bit.
It's like crazy. All right, so the meat of the conversation here, man. You're the owner of Hashtag Comedy Company, man. Very big news. I keep like trying to remind myself, to me, I don't know how you see it, but this is a comedy club. I keep trying to remind myself of that, like put that in my head, like comedy club. But it's so fantastic. It's so freaking dope. I think how you got this whole thing together is just totally freaking dope. And you're in like the freaking Short North, and you're a daggone woman. Like let's applaud that. How did you come up with the whole concept? How did the whole process start? And the reason why, because I think it's so dope that you have your own space, your own venue, and there are might be other people out there that wants to learn how to create their own space and own venue, so they might get some nuggets, some tidbits from anything that you're about to say about that whole process.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to, this is a conversation I'm very passionate, so I'm going to try to like only I'm going to try to go too deep, because I could literally talk, I have talked about this for hours. I would say, if I'm going to say, I'm a co-owner, so there's two owners, Matt White and Chris Heiberg. Amazing people that do this. Without them, they could probably do it without me. So I really appreciate them for even just letting me be a co-owner and doing all of this. So it started. So Hashtag Comedy Company has existed before I joined, like 10 years ago, and they were a group at first, and then they've been producing improv shows. I was in Columbus for like 10-ish years at this point. COVID in January 2019 or 2020, they were going to open up their own venue. downs. And this was like a year after I became a cast, not a co-owner. Obviously COVID happened. Some owners did professional shifts or whatever, left the ownership and asked, you know, I was helping with the marketing time and do some other things. And so I asked if I had an owner, and Chris were very, very nice in letting me on. And so from then started talking about opening up our own venue again and what that would look like. And one of the things at that point really involved in the stand-up scene and the improv scene. And so I wanted to make sure that Hashtag wasn't just an improv theater. It's a comedy club. And that's something that I think that we're still working on because we have this branding from the improv days that is kind of taking a while to transition over into, yeah, we also do like stand-up and we get up and we do sketch. But yeah, so that's kind of like a general like background of who we are. So I asked to become a co-owner based off of like all the work I had been working on the side of things. And I will say this on it too, like a lot of people who end up comedians, I think limit themselves knowing a lot about business stuff. And there's like a lot of benefits to if you're just like a mid performer. Like, I don't think I'm the best performer by any means, but I think like having a good sense, knowing how to conduct yourself, knowing how to read contracts and things in this way gets you further. And I think it makes people like work with you. And so early on, I was like really trying to carry myself like professionally and asking how I can help business side of things. And then that falls into like producing shows. And then that also applies to just being to work with, like, even if you never want to produce a show, knowing that like, okay, if I'm booked on a show, I'm going to promote. That really shows a lot of like initiative. So I would say in general, it's like a good for, I think, anybody who wants to perform, not even anything or be a producer. Also I'll say is like, I think a lot of people don't ask for things sometimes. Like, I think we get really thinking like the answer is automatically going to be no. Like, this all started because I asked with marketing, you know, and I wouldn't have that if I didn't ask. And it was really me to ask. I was like, they definitely have any help. And so not being the one to write off, I think, is huge. Like, let somebody else write you off. Don't be your own biggest critic. It's hard enough. People are critical enough. You don't also need to not be on your own team. And then I would say the other thing we mentioned is like, being a woman in comedy is definitely a very interesting challenge, I would say. I forget who said that there was this quote I read about, like, basically male comics can be any kind of comedian. Like, they can have genres, they can have styles and types. Female comedians can only be a female comedian. And a female comedian said that this, like, in of like, people will say like, okay, I got the guy who does like the stories on, I got the one-liner comic, I have the, you know, the blue humor comic, and then I have woman comic. Like, that's how people book their shows. And even like before we Hashtags Club, I was like producing shows, and they would just so happen to be all female shows. Like, I would just so happen to book favorite comedians who happen to be female. I wasn't marketing it as like a female show. I was marketing as anyone promotes a all male show. And I'd get so many comedians, like guy comedians in the scene be like, yeah, dude, I love you're producing all these women shows, you know? And it's, man, I'm so proud that you've produced all these shows, you know? Nobody ever tells you that. So it's kind of an interesting thing where it's like, you're kind of a woman first and then comedian. And there's definitely some like tough things that I think I have to experience that like, you know, male counterparts don't have to. Like, there's an amount of like, respect, I think, that doesn't really come innately. Like, we had to kick somebody out from the club a couple of weeks ago when we were there, because like Sansom, like, he's just being a jerk, you know, being disrespectful to comics. His set was like racist, like, and it's kind of one of those things where if I was like this big burly dude, I don't would like try that, or I don't think that, or I don't think it would like, you know, give me such a hard time. And I think that's kind of one of those things where I'm like, okay, I just have to deal with it and like figure out how to do this. And I'm really thankful for the comedians and that are like really big allies, really supportive, and for all the Columbus scene is very supportive in that way. And I love seeing this like shift in wanting to get like more comedians time and getting more attention for female comics or non-binary comics. I think that's really important.
I'll just say, I think the comics here in the city that are women are funnier than the male overall. And there's no shade to the male. I always just find women to be more funnier than men. I think just for the simple fact, because my mom, like I said, my mom is what got me into comedy, and I just thought she was hilarious. And I guess after meeting my mom, like, the standard or the bar was set so high, it's like, okay, I haven't found someone that's as funny as her yet. But when I find a woman that makes me laugh, I'm like, okay, like, you're funny. You know what I mean? Like, and then just like watching documentaries, I try not to even like, if I was hosting, I try not to say woman comic, like, you know, be like, we got our first lady comic of the night. I just say comic, you know, there's no need to say woman. Clearly they're going to tell when she walks up here, you know? So, I feel like for a guy, it's easy for us to be a comedian, whereas we're opposed to women. There's a lot more hurdles that they have to go through to make us laugh. So I appreciate it a little bit more. So I definitely understand it, but I try to just be more like cautious and just definitely making sure I provide a space where women feel, you know, comfortable. You know, like if you tell a woman, like, come over to right, not that I have, but like tell a woman come over to right, like make sure that's what you're going to do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just making it comfortable. You know what I'm saying? Because like, I feel like one of the reasons why I guess we make it uncomfortable for you guys is because like you guys are in a space where you could be yourself, and then it's like guys be like, oh, that's how women really feel. So then they feel like they can talk to you any old kind of way, and it's like, no, she's still a woman, you know, like she just said how she felt, but she's still a woman. Like, you gotta, you know what I'm saying? So I try to keep that in mind. But I do feel like hashtag is like a space for everybody, and you do get that representation, and you do see it, and you do feel that when you come in there, it's not like just this guy's club. Like, it's really just a space for any and everybody. I think that's why it's so popular right now.
Thank you. It really means a lot. It means a lot. Are all really trying to make that the main, like, the focus of anything that we do. Like, I mean, I've been posting about shows at hashtag or wanting to collaborate with people. And like, I think that's a really big thing. Like, having this opportunity, having this form that I do and that the other co-owners also have, like to make sure that's like a jumping off point. Well, if that's what, like, you know, obviously you're welcome to just come for like our open mics, or if we book you on a show, or if you're booked on another show that's happening to happen at the club. But on top of that, it's like if people have wanted and they've never produced before, I'm helping a couple people who've never produced a show, you know? And some of them are women. And my hope with that is like if we get male producers in the scene, then that means more female comics or books are booked. More people can kind of like rise out of Columbus if they want to, or just get known from and that's really to me. So I appreciate you saying that. And I think like enough room for everybody to succeed. I think it's to get caught in your head and be when in reality it's like just be, somebody else's success doesn't take away from your own.
Yeah. When I was a couple months ago and I was looking at like the list that we have of all the shows here in the city, like majority of them are ran by women. And I don't think a lot of people, you know, realize that. And when you're at hashtag, I had a question. I'm trying to grab it back because I lost it. But when you're at hashtag though, I lost it. I tried. It's gone. I don't know where that question went.
It's okay.
One of the things about hashtag is that you do put, like I said, you do provide a space for everybody. I got it back. Thank you. How do you get the word? What like kind of like skills or tricks or tools are you using to get the word out about hashtag? Because like previous conversations that we had, like pretty much every show is kind of like sold out, and then even like the open mic, like people are coming up and filling that. Do you think it may be like the location that you have, or just good marketing, or like what, how did you, because a lot of people, they start new things and they might not make it last because they don't get the attention or attraction that they need right away or that they would hope to have. But like, you guys are like killing it right out the park. What's been your like your ingredients to success?
Thanks. I think that's a really good question. So the is like we've had a brand for the last 10 years. So go club opened. We had 2,800 people on our mailing list or our email. We did like a press release. Did the media, Columbus Underground, of course, which has been super great and amazing to the entire Columbus comedy scene, and help us promote the scene to the greater public. I think the location also helps, like just foot traffic and people coming in. We also have a Columbus Experience Colorship, so they sponsor like woman or like minority owned businesses. And you can apply for this. I think in the fall is when they do it, but I'm sure it's on their way. And you can post all of your events on there. It's really been helpful. And I think just as a venue promoting things and collaborate people that you normally don't collaborate with. Like our show on Saturday sold out, and so it had about 55 people in the crowd, and only of them had been to a #comedy show before. I think a big part of that was collaborating with people that we don't collaborate with. So big benefit in like stepping outside of comfort zone and stepping outside of just like the improv scene, outside of like who you work with. And it also just helps the scene as a, you know, as a whole, because it's people that are familiar with new people and vice versa. And that's kind of what you need to have like a sustainable scene that can grow and scale to the point where multiple shows selling out every night, which we already have. But then on top of that, you know, agents want to start being here to like scout talent or like there's things that we can do in the scene to grow. And I think that's kind of the main thing. So I think that part of marketing is just collaborating, doing Experience Columbus posts, social media, obviously email mark people. Like if you're not sending emails, I know everybody that has a comedy show through Bright has an email list. You need to be sending emails. You need to create a MailChimp account. It's like for the most part, you need to be sending out emails. Like you need to keep in contact with your base constantly. And my email is like I want to know when the next show is. So, yeah, I was just kind of a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, emails are important. I had another producer on this show, and the show pretty much sells out every time. And I don't know what made me to tell him this, but we were talking about the show and stuff, and I was like, you got to get emails. I was like, are you getting emails? He was like, no. I was like, you're insane. You got to get the emails, dog. Like, you got to, like, that's like super big, bro. Like that's you got to get the emails. It's very, very, very important. Anybody producing shows, it's the number one thing. Make sure you get their freaking email.
Yeah, and if you work with a venue, ask if you can get emails too. Like that's what, you know, I'm open to doing that. Like we've had other give us the email list for people that have come to our shows. Like that's huge. It's a really big thing nobody thinks about. Like it's a big, it's a powerful, especially if you're an independent producer who your own venue. Like that's a good way for people to keep in touch with you and know when your next show is. So yeah, that's crazy. It's like, I mean, if he's selling out every show, if he's three shows, he probably has at least like a couple hundred contacts already, you know, like.
Yeah. I was like, dog, you need to go back on those Eventbrites and get those emails. You need to single-handedly write them all down since you didn't get it the first time. You want to be hard headed, but I just think he didn't know. But now that he knows, he was like, okay, cool. So, I'm not gonna lie, I'm really excited for like the summertime, because I feel like hashtag is just gonna blow up even more, because you know, summertime short north, a lot of people are out there. Like I'm really like excited about it. I love going there. I love it. Yeah, it's a cool place. And you know, now that I'm thinking about this right now, and I'm not just saying this because you're on here, my first time going to LA was about 2 years ago. And it was the first time that I've ever felt like safe in comedy, meaning like people, I felt like people were really just listening to my material, see how I wrote, try to understand my humor. And I will say that that venue that I was at was the Hollywood Comedy Club or whatever, with Joanne Summers. And I will honestly say your place makes me feel just as safe. So yeah, you're doing great things. Doing great things.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really, really appreciate that. Really important to me that people feel safe and people feel try new things and be themselves and not, you know, harassed by the audience and get people that are listening to them and get good feedback. So I really, really appreciate that. That's probably the compliment I can receive. So I thank you.
I'm not gonna lie, I like the brick wall. It gives me like New York feels. Like I'd be like, you know what? I don't even want to move. I just want to be posted up on this wall. I'm gonna act like this is the fucking cellar, and it's my cellar for the next five fucking minutes.
Dude, I love it. That's good. Yeah, that's we were thinking about moving the stage somewhere else. Can't we have to have the brick wall? That's a mandatory. So.
Yeah, man. If y'all get a sign up there, say hashtag. Yeah, that'd be super dope. Yeah, I'm excited to see how it grows. And I'm just sitting back watching and learning because I want to have my own venue one day too. So I'm just taking in every like mental notes. Like I think it's dope. That's super dope. Super cool.
Well, when you're, you know, I'm happy to help you any way I can. And if you, we've already talked about this, but I'm always happy to collaborate. And anything I know is like free knowledge to anybody else. You know, if you, I don't know everything, but I'm happy to tell what I do. So
now, Hannah, I'm going to ask you a round of questions that I ask everybody as we start to wrap it up. The first one is, who is on your Mount Rushmore for comedy? And since you do so many different forms of comedy, you could literally, I mean, anybody can, but everybody just think they could pick stand-up comedians. You could choose whoever you want.
Gosh. Okay. Andy Daly, he's an improviser, Daly Podcast Pilot Project, one of the best comedy podcasts ever. So him, Donald is very good. Very good. Kate McKinnon from SN, also super funny. What's her name? Oh my god, she's this one storyteller woman, and she has a story about her mom's pills. I can't remember the name. She's so funny and I love her. Anyways, those are my four, whoever that other one is.
Hannah, what words of like encouragement would you give to anybody that's listening to this right now?
Don't be your own worst critic. Try to just keep it moving. Don't be afraid of what other people are doing. Their success does not damper your own life. If anything, it might even help it. So.
Message.
My fault for the delay, but I was there. Hannah, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
Because this is an amazing podcast. All about how you can be a comedian, or if you just are a comedian, you like learning about maybe behind the scenes, we kind of back the curtain, so you get a kind of what a comedian's process is. That's really cool. And nobody else is having comedians and beans in bed in front. That doesn't include OnlyFans.
Bing bong. Hannah, tell people where they can find you at.
Find me at hashtag comedy company at 12th North High Street at any time. Just kidding, I'm not there right now. Or you can catch me at Hannah Rowe on Instagram. I do improv, I do stand-up. I might be doing some videos coming out here soon about, so catch me on there. And come to hashtag, more importantly, fun.
And if you want to catch us next week on our episode, be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel, TYE Comedy. Also, if you want to see more weekly clips of our interviews, you could follow us on Instagram at Comedians in Bed Podcast. Or, you know, if you are not subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You can listen wherever you listen to podcasts. We had the amazing, talented Hannah Rome's on here with us today. Make sure you check out hashtag downtown in the Short North area. She'll be happy to have you there. Hannah, we appreciate you for joining us this week. We'll see you guys next week.